As we get ready for another Masters season, was golf better back in the day? In the new book, Men in Green, acclaimed Sports Illustrated writer Michael Bamberger goes on a quest to find out. The result is a candid, nostalgic, intimate portrait of golf's greatest generation then and now. Bamberger fell for the game of golf as a teenager in the 70s. He spent years caddying, playing, and writing about the sport. Again, the title of the book is Men in Green. It's published by Simon & Schuster. Michael Bamberger, thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Delighted to be here, Joe.
Very nice to have you. So what got you thinking about whether golf was better then or now?
Well, I think what got me started on the idea is what every middle-aged person thinks about the things they fall in love with as a child, whether it's a person or a sport or a movie or whatever it might be. I'm born in 1960, and I fell for golf in the mid-1970s at the height of what I call its Sansevieria era. And the golfers were just very dynamic, charismatic figures. And the tour was a tour. Basically, the same group of guys went from every week. They went from New Orleans to Pensacola or from L.A. to Pebble Beach into the California desert. And they were real nomads. They traveled from week to week. And there was a camaraderie among them that comes to mind for me in the old Sister Sledge song, We Are Family. So I wanted to see if my memories of what that era was like, how that stacked up with what the people in it were really like and what those people thought about what that era was like as well. So I went around with a friend of mine, Mike Donald, and we visited a bunch of legends, some really famous like Arnold Palmer and some that people would probably not know, like a man named Golfball, a caddy in Jackson, Mississippi.
So before we talk about some of the specifics in the names, you recall this time where you're in a restaurant in Chicago, you're covering the Ryder Cup, and there's a paper tablecloth and you're writing down names, and you have one column for living legends and another column for secret legends. So what are the difference between those two categorizations?
Right. Well, the living legends, for those who follow golf closely, they'll know all the names on the living legends. I'll run down real quick here. Palmer, Jack Nicklaus, Mickey Wright, who's the great woman golfer of the 50s and the 60s, Ken Venturi, who died while I was reporting the story, but got to see him extensively before he did, Tom Watson, the dominant golfer of the 80s, Curtis Strange, who won two U.S. Opens, Brett Couples, Ben Crenshaw, and Hal Irwin. So those are pretty much household names that people follow the game closely. Those who don't, they just know they aren't a Palmer iced tea, and that's okay. But in a lot of things in life, I'm fascinated by this whole notion of secret legends, and everybody has them in their own sport. It could be a hitting instructor in baseball. It could be a roadie for a musician. As a matter of fact, there's a movie out now called The Wrecking Crew that's about these studio session musicians. Have you heard of that movie? Or
yes, trip? Yes.
Yeah, so those guys are secret legends. And so some of the secret legends from the 70s that I really loved are guys like this Golfball, this caddy from Jackson, Miss that I mentioned, or a man named Sandy Tatum who ran the USGA in the 70s, who's now in his 90s. And I had as much fun, tracking down these people. Some of them, well, for instance, one of them, Golfball, I didn't know if he was dead or alive, and found him in Jackson, Mississippi. Because they're the underpinning of how this pro golf tour worked. And they added a lot for me reporting the book, and I hope they added some fun for the reader reading it.
So as you said, you're accompanied by a sidekick and a friend, Mike Donald, who is on the list of secret legends.
Yes, he's probably the ultimate secret. He's probably the best known of my secret legends because he played the tour for years.
Yep.
And he was a runner-up in the 1990 U.S. Open. I mean, he's a very close friend, and we're different as two people could be, but we developed a very close friendship over a lot of years now. And, so it's a little bit of a buddy trip roadshow with a little bit of a Felix and an Oscar. It doesn't quite play out that way, but two very different people. But this is Mike Donald, and by the way, that's a Mike Donald construction. This Mike Donald, this blank blank, this Barack Obama. If he wants to talk about the President of the United States, he'll say, this Obama is beautiful. That's one of his, regular constructions. This Obama is beautiful. So he'll go say, this Jack Nicklaus. I mean, I can't get enough of this guy. But anyway, this Mike Donald, who has been a professional golfer all his adult life, is probably one of the greatest reporters I could ever know. And he's got an unbelievable ability to engage people in conversation and get interesting information out them and get people to talk about their lives in really intimate ways, which is one of the things that I hope makes the book interesting.
Because you say in the book, and I thought it was interesting, because in coming up with that secret legends list, it was almost subconscious, right? These were just names that just came to you that were in you.
Yes. Yes. There was no great science. I was just writing down names quickly, and they fell into. But this is sort of a hobby of mine. I could be at a baseball game and write down, you know, a lineup of all left-handed hitters or ball players, all Jewish, all names that end in Y or whatever odd thing it might be. Art Chansky seems to show up on both those lists now that I'm thinking about it. But in any event, yes, I was just sort of having fun, although I had in the back of my mind that I wanted to do something that brought to mind. I worked with a very fine editor at Simon Schuster named Jofi Ferrari Adler, and he and I are both fans of a legendary baseball book called Boys of Summer that a lot of people will know. And Boys of Summer, Roger Kahn, the author, goes back in the 70s and revisits some of the great Brooklyn Dodger iconic players of the 50s, the Jackie Robinson, Pee Wee Reese teams. And so that was a little bit of an inspiration. So I sort of had that already in mind. It would be great if I could do that sort of thing for golf while I was writing down these names.
In the book plates, when you open the book, it says birthplaces of golfing legends, and it's a beautiful graphic. Can we take anything from the geography?
It's kind of weird when you thank you for noting that. The art department, Simon Schuster, did such a great job with
it's
that.
Beautiful.
It's beautiful. Such an unusual. Thank you very much for saying that. I hugely appreciate that. That was a labor of love for a lot of people. And Mike Donald, who, you know, is not in book publishing, he's looking at these end papers and saying, these end papers, they're beautiful. Guy in a bookstore, you know, doesn't know which book to buy. He looks at these end papers. He's going to buy this book. So I mentioned that to my editor, Jofi, and Jofi said, that's exactly the correct idea. But I like how you're thinking about it. Well, it's weird, you know, so just to familiarize your listeners who obviously can't see the
right
papers, or they could if they had the book, if they get it at their local library.
There you go.
But it shows where the 18 people are born. And there's a big congregation of them in the Northeast. And they're all born between, I think, 1920 and late 50s. So between 1920 and 1959, they've got Fred way up there in Seattle, Washington. There's nobody as far north as he. And there's not a single person in Florida or Georgia or South Carolina, which is unusual, Arizona, because those are hotbeds of golf today. But no, the answer is I don't know what to make out of it, except for that it's quirky and interesting, and it's supposed to sort of get you in the mood for a road trip.
That's right. And it is interesting because you look at both coasts and then the center of the country, and that's it. When you were putting the list together and visiting the people, was there a set idea of what you wanted to ask, of what you wanted to find out from them?
Well, I hugely appreciate that question because there was very much, and I'm going to answer your question, but don't take it as literally as I'm going to say it. To ask, did you read Vanity Fair at all?
Yes.
So Vanity Fair's got this thing in the back of the magazine called the Proust Questionnaire.
Yes.
So one of the questions in the, I don't know if it's Proust or Proust, I've heard both. But
yeah, we'll go with Proust.
More pretentious. Proust is better?
Well, I don't know. I don't know. That's how I would have pronounced it.
Okay.
I'm with you.
Well, yeah, okay. Well, I'm just trying to sound educated here. So the Proust questionnaire, one of the questions in the Proust questionnaire is, and it's such a profound and difficult question, when and where were you happiest? And it takes a remarkable person to be truthful enough to really answer that question in the first place. But that was really the question I had in the back of my mind for a lot of these people. When and where are you happiest? Now, the thing about that question, if you flat out ask it to someone you don't really know that well, you're not going to get an answer because it's too personal. But you can nibble around the edges and get pretty close to it. And that's what I tried to do with each person that I saw.
So that can be a place. So that can be like Saginaw, Michigan, or it can be a particular golf course or even more general than that, right?
Yes. You know, when I went, for instance, exactly, Joe, when I went to see Arnold, I thought Arnold Palmer is the first guy Mike and I saw on this tour. Now, he loves flying, loves tournament golf. He's a very successful businessman. He loves ice tea, whatever. But we sort of just opened any door he wanted to open, and he went right through 1954. Now, it's amazing. We're talking about something well over a half century ago, and he was recalling in beautiful detail how he met his first wife, who passed away in the late 90s, I think in 99, Winnie Walzer of Coopersburg, PA, and it was told in such vivid detail. And of course, I think it's hard for people to really recognize this, you know, for all that he's accomplished and for all the wealth that he has and the fame and success and all the rest, sometimes when you're flat broke and starting out, you have more romantic attachment to that than any other period in your life. And he probably could have talked about that all day, a tremendous energy for it and beautiful detail, and told it in such a measured, interesting way. So yes, to answer your question, yes, they could go any way they wanted to go. Nicholas talked about discovering the importance of the rules as a kid. Now, was that, you know, is that literally the moment, the single most happy moment in his life? No, but it just sort of came out there. Golf ball, the caddy in Jackson, Miss. He talked about just being on the road with his buddies, traveling this country and, you know, in beater cars. And so it was different for different people. You know, I really struggled describing the book to friends while I was writing it and doing the reporting for it. And a great friend of mine, Bob Warner, to whom the book's dedicated, after he read it, he's just recently retired, but a long, long time reporter on the newspapers in Philadelphia. And he said, you know, I can see why you struggle to describe it, because each of these people that you're writing here about, they're all so different and they're all coming at it in a different way. And it's not really super cohesive that way. And that's the nature of life, really. So, yes, I hope that answers your question.
Do you think if there is a 14, 15-year-old kid who is watching the golf scene now and who's getting into it like you did in the 1970s, in 40 years or so would be able to make a list as you did with?
Yeah, what an interesting question. And I really hope the answer is yes. I hope that 14-year-old kid looks at Jordan Spieth and Patrick Reed, who are two young, up-and-coming, very talented players in the game today. I hope that kid can look at those players like I looked at Kurt Strange and Ben Crenshaw, and I don't think there's any reason why he or she couldn't. And I hope that there'll be secret legends in the game forever, because it makes things much richer. And I hope in, 40 years from now, whenever it might be, he's looking back and say, well, back in the day, let me tell you, this Jordan Spieth, he had a funny grip and a funny swing, but he did this, that, and the other thing. And watching him was great. And now that Sam Woods, Tiger's daughter, is about to retire from her long career on the LPGA Tour, I'm telling you, she was nothing like what Michelle Wee is on the LPGA Tour. So I think that's human nature. And it's great. You know, it's to be expected.
So two other ways of asking the question are, you know, did they make them like they used to, number one? And number two, do you derive as much pleasure in watching the players of today as you did in watching the players when you were 14, 15?
Yeah, I don't, you know, I have friends who, my age, I'm maybe 55 in mid-April, who have like the same attachment to baseball now they have when they were kids. And I'm awed by it. And I wish I had it myself, and I don't. But I think what the players do today is exciting, and particularly the way they play off the tee with every club on par threes and, with the driver in hand, it's exciting and it's athletic. But do I have the emotional attachment to it that I used to have? No. But when I'm covering events for Sports Illustrated, I develop and that might be on a professional basis, but I develop an emotional attachment very quickly to whatever event I'm going to write up. But it's not quite the same as it is when you're a kid and you're just, you're a Watson guy or you're a Nicklaus guy or whatever it might be. But I think that's human nature too. And I've got kids of my own and a wife and a yard that needs tending. So other things crack your life as you get older as well.
Sure. Well, the name of the book is Men in Green. It is from Sports Illustrated Books, from Simon & Schuster. Michael Bamberger, thank you very much for spending time with us. I appreciate it.
Well, you're incredibly nice to have me. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Again, the title of the book, Men in Green, by Michael Bamberger. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.